Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And I happen to be in Montesorino, California. I've been here for 1 month, the entire month of June, and we're leaving today. We're leaving today to return back to New York to heat, hearth, and humidity. It's been an absolutely spectacular time. I've been here for work and a bit of play. It's felt like a vacation, even though I've been doing a bit of work, and I'm so grateful to have had this opportunity. I really feel quite fortunate staying at a family member's stunning home in their pool house by a luscious pool. I've been spending a lot of time outdoors. Of course, it's summer and it's warm, and I just love being outside. I'm outside right now. I'm using every opportunity I can to be outside. So we sleep indoors and then have our breakfast outside most of the time. And I've been spending a lot of time running and swimming and romping and playing. And I love it. And it's a tremendous contrast to where I live in New York City, this concrete jungle urban life. And I keep wondering about myself what it is I love about these different places, because they are so different. And I really love being outdoors, and it's a lot easier to be outdoors here where I am now than it is in that more, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, we have those crazy seasons in New York where it's cold or it's wet, and when it's wet and hot. Anyway, I'm going back to today, and I've almost forgotten what it's like because I've been away for a month. So when I get back, I'll let you know how I feel. I'm sure I'll love it when I get back. One of the things that I'm learning and observing while I'm here, I don't like driving in California. I came out here for the first time in 1982. And I called it the Promised Land back then because, well, it hasn't changed too much, but the weather is phenomenal. The sun's shining all the time. The sky is blue. The air is dry. There's a drought. The drought is one thing. That is one of the prices you pay for being in a place like this, along with the potential of earthquakes. Every place has its ups and downs. But there's something really lovely about this place, and I wasn't the only one who figured that out. I lived here for 9 years, and then I traveled very often to California for 6 years after that. It's really crowded now, and the traffic is really something you don't want to be in. And I find I'm really glad where we are, because it's within walking distance to downtown Los Gatos, a really lovely, cute little town. And I understand more the benefit of the way European communities were set up, for example, where there's residential area built around a main street and a main commercial area where you have access to basically everything you need within walking distance. And I have had no desire to really drive around. I hope to see more of that as we continue to build to get back to centering little cities and towns around a commercial area where everybody has access to what they need within close proximity. And that means healthy food too, of course, not just fast food restaurants. So that's been really phenomenal. What else? I've been swimming, and when I lived in California back in the late 80s, early 90s, I had access to one of these large half Olympic-sized swimming pools and would swim a mile a day, and I love it. And I've been swimming here. I don't really have the opportunity to swim when I'm in New York. It's more like a treat when I'm near a nice pool or near a a pond. I love swimming in fresh water. I don't really like swimming in the ocean very much. That's not my thing. But to be able to do laps, I find it not only a great exercise, but it's very zen. It's very meditative being in that giant womb. And I've had a great opportunity to swim almost every day here. It's just really fabulous. So I am grateful. I am so grateful. And it's good to think about the things we are grateful for. I've been doing a lot of visiting while in California of friends and family, and recently we visited a friend in Watsonville. And one of the things that gave me pause was driving around Watsonville, where a lot of America's food is grown. And you could see the large fields of fruit and vegetables growing, and see the people who are harvesting them, because this is a big harvest period, well, at least the beginning. And there were lots of people out in the field and bending over in the hot sun. And, you know, I've seen it in pictures, I've seen it in paintings, I know it goes on, and it goes on all the time, but to see it in reality, I really wanted to take in a deep breath and say thanks to these people, most of them who are not paid very well, do not have great benefits. There's only a handful of farming companies that really treat their workers well. And these are the people who bring us our food that we eat every day. And I'm glad that I have the real image in my mind, knowing where my food is coming from. At least if it comes from California. I can't say what it looks like if it comes from Mexico and beyond. But I'm sure it's not any different. It may be even a little worse in terms of how people are treated. So I'm just grateful to all those folks who bring us our food, and I look forward to a day when everyone is treated fairly. You know, we just had this amazing thing happen with our Supreme Court in the United States approving same-sex marriage, marriage equality. Now we need to move on to all those other issues so that people have equality, true equality, food to feed their families all the time, and so that everybody truly has an opportunity to live their life the way they want to and express themselves the way they were meant to. We're all unique individuals. We all have something special to bring to this planet. I look forward to seeing more opportunity for everyone. And that's what I think of when I see simple little images like people working in a farm picking strawberries. And let's talk about the strawberries for a moment, shall we? The strawberries are really phenomenal right now. The prices are dropping here because they're grown right here. I said I was in Watsonville, and a lot of the strawberries are grown here. I, for the most part, only eat organic strawberries because, as you may know, one really nasty chemical is used to grow strawberries and keep those pests away, and it's methyl bromide. And there's been a lot of politics around methyl bromide and a lot of effort to not approve its use. Hopefully we're going to phase out of its use. Unfortunately, some of the things that chemical companies have come up with to use instead, we've discovered are worse, like methyl iodide. But I recommend as much as you possibly can, even if those strawberries look so perfect and red and delicious. If they're not organic, I would try to avoid them for the most part. Occasionally I will have a strawberry and I don't know where it comes from. And when I do eat one, and I don't know if it is organic, and I think it probably isn't, I enjoy it. And I tell my body to enjoy it and not worry about it and have it take the good from it and let the rest go. Our bodies really do have the capability of removing toxins. The problem is when we take in too many toxins and then the body gets overwhelmed and it just kind of gives up. Or it does the best it can, but it can't remove everything. But we can remove, we are designed to remove things that aren't meant to nourish our bodies. And I like to remind people when they're eating, don't judge when you're eating. Just enjoy. Food is meant to be enjoyed. You can worry about it later. Well, don't worry, because worrying doesn't get you anywhere. But I like to encourage a positive conversation with our bodies all the time. I think it has a tremendous impact on our health. And it feels so much better when we're cheering ourselves on rather than beating ourselves down. It just feels better to feel better. How silly does that sound? Back to Watsonville. When we visited my friend in Watsonville, he was so excited to show us his coffee-making setup. Now, I'm not a coffee drinker, and I want to get into coffee a little bit now that I've picked on that subject. But he buys his own beans, and he roasts them himself. He has a simple little roasting apparatus, and then he grinds them and has a really stunning high-end espresso machine. So I decided I would have a cup of espresso. As I said, I don't drink coffee. I might have a cup of espresso once a year at most. Usually, if by chance I'm in Italy, which doesn't happen very often anymore, or in Costa Rica, I kind of have this little tradition with myself. I used to fly to Costa Rica a lot between 2004 and 2006. And now I try to go once a year, although it doesn't always happen. And in the airport in San Jose, Costa Rica, they started offering little samples of coffee because they like to sell their coffee beans to tourists. It's a great gift to bring home. Costa Rica is known for their coffee. And when they started offering this, they were offering little samples of coffee and little samples of chocolate. And they had different varieties of little balls of chocolate. Some of them were filled with jelly fillings or covering nuts, whatever. And I was excited because I read the ingredients and some of them were vegan, and I would enjoy a little half espresso cup, I mean, not very much, of organic Costa Rican coffee and have a little piece of chocolate. And it was just a fun way to enter the country and a fun way to leave the country whenever I was in the airport. Well, you know, it seems like nothing lasts forever, or nothing stays the same. And I guess that idea did so well, and more people have been coming to Costa Rica. The airport's gotten larger. There are more of these gift shops in the airport. They're offering lots and lots of samples of coffee and chocolate, and I found it just doesn't feel as much fun anymore. The quality of the chocolate has it's kind of gone down. It's not vegan anymore. They add these shellac-like coatings, which are from bugs, by the way, that make the chocolate shiny. And I've kind of given that up. But that was my moment with a little tiny bit of coffee. What I don't like about coffee, and here's the thing, the studies on coffee have really been mixed. There are some things that say it's not good for us for a variety of reasons, and then there are new reports all the time that say, oh, it's good for this and that. And you just have to make your own choice about coffee. I find that I don't like the breath that results after drinking coffee, either my own or on anyone else. Coffee breath, I don't think it's very pleasant. And I use that as a gauge, saying if I don't like that, I don't think it's good to have. Okay, back to my friend in Watsonville. He really wanted to make us his own special espresso. So he roasts his coffee beans, and he does it at a very low roasting temperature and does it slowly and makes sure that he doesn't burn the beans. And this is important. When I had his cup of espresso, there was no bitterness. It was really smooth and actually quite lovely. I think in a lot of commercial bean roasting, you get a wide range, but you know, just like in anything, manufacturers are always looking for a way to make things faster and less expensive. So some may use a higher temperature and a faster roasting time so that it can be done more quickly. And as a result, you get that bitter flavoring in the coffee. So it was really delightful to try his own brew. And now I'm set for at least another year until I have another cup. Now, there are some things that really irk me about coffee. And I've probably raged about it before on this program. I remember when the Keurig appliance came out and it was all the rage, and it's still being used quite a bit. The thing that bugged me about it, well, a few things bugged me about it. One is, how far from life do we want to get? How many experiences do we want to give up? How hard is it to make a cup of coffee that we need to make little individual things in plastic packages? So the packaging is what really irks me. These tiny little pieces of plastic. Not only is it an environmental disaster using plastic and using plastic to cover small individual portions of anything, it can't be healthy for us as the plastics leach into the food we're going to consume, and it's true of coffee. So there's that. I've tasted a few of these, actually the tea versions, and I found them terrible, just no flavor, and not really worthy of my time to drink. I'd rather just not drink anything. I just get frustrated with how far we can go with convenience. And there's always a price. There's the price in quality, because the flavor and taste go down in foods that are prepackaged and prepared for us to do quickly. That's what the slow food movement is all about, bringing back the quality and taste and joy in taking the time to prepare food and taking the time to eat food. And when you invest in something, in anything, you will get so much more out of it. So when you invest in your food, not just in purchasing quality food or purchasing expensive restaurant food, when you take the time to invest in preparing and in eating, you will get so much more out of it, and it's better for you. All right, let me continue to rage about coffee a little bit. You know, I started drinking coffee when I was in high school. And I did it, I guess, because it was an adult thing to do, and I was so adult. And one of my pleasurable memories, and you may think this is a little strange, but I loved my math classes, and I was taking a calculus class in high school, and I found it like a big puzzle or game, and I really enjoyed doing my homework, but I wanted to do it in a very peaceful environment, and that just couldn't happen in my house until everyone was asleep. My parents, my younger brother, my sister was already out in college, and I would wait for everyone to go to sleep, and I would make myself a big pile of eggs, like scrambled eggs or eggs over easy, and my version of café au lait. I had a tremendous French influence from studying French in junior high school and high school. I loved all things French. So I wanted to make café au lait, but I didn't know anything about café au lait. I didn't know anything about coffee and roasting and beans, etc. So I used what we had in the house, which was some sort of instant coffee, and the kind you just pour boiling water over and stir in your cup. And I would put it in a saucepan with some milk and sugar and mix up my own café au lait and pour it in a big bowl and have my eggs and toast and coffee and stay up for a few extra hours and do my homework. And I really enjoyed it. I don't know how I enjoyed waking up in the morning. I know I missed the school bus a lot. My father had to take me to school, but it all worked out. And then in college, of course, I did lots and lots of coffee. I never slept back in college. I can't do that anymore. I absolutely need 8 hours of sleep a day, which is why I've really cut back on drinking any sort of caffeine. But back then I was drinking coffee, and then I started to hear about how it wasn't so good for you and decided I would stop drinking coffee. And I moved over to tea, and then I began my journey in discovery of teas, and that's been another long journey. It's interesting how we learn things. I'm always fascinated, of course, about food and how things change over the decades. What we think is good 1 week or 1 month or 1 year, and then discover it isn't so good later on. And that's why I get back to making sure whenever you consume anything, you really enjoy it. Because I really believe the body will take the good from it and leave the rest behind. I think about all of the things that I consumed when I was younger, and I wouldn't touch them now. But back then, I thought they were good, and so my body got that message and thought they were good, too. So I moved over to tea, and first I drank a lot of tea with sugar in it because my palate hadn't adjusted to the bitter tea flavor. And I say bitter intentionally because I wasn't drinking quality teas, and they were bitter. A lot of people don't like tea because it's bitter, but that's because they're drinking a crummy tea. Tea shouldn't be bitter at all. So I finally weaned myself off of sugar, and over the years I've experimented with a variety of different teas, flavored teas, herbal teas, green teas, white teas. I didn't quite understand when I started hearing about white tea, what all the fuss was about, and it's been a journey, and now I understand what the fuss is indeed about. Just like with the Keurig coffee packaging, tea, when in a bag, an individual tea bag, also has packaging, and it's something that I personally didn't even notice for a really, really, really long time. It's funny what we choose to see and what we somehow choose not to see. But tea is presented in a bag very often because it's convenient. Why? Because otherwise we would have to spoon out loose tea and put it in a mesh tea egg or a little mesh basket and put it in a teapot and brew it, and for some reason that's just too much trouble. We need everything individualized and as easy and convenient as possible. I'm really starting to dislike that word convenient. Can you tell? So the tea bag comes with problems that I never even thought about for such a long time. Some tea bags are made in paper and some are made in plastic. Number one, it's another one of those environmental wasteful things that is not necessary. And some of these tea bags that are made in plastic, now they tell us that the plastic that they're made in is one are safe. They're pretty much made from nylon or PET, which is polyethylene terephthalate, and they're two of the safest plastics. They have a low leaching potential and a high melting point, but there haven't been a lot of studies done on this, and I think that anytime you're mixing heat and plastic, you're going to get a little in your cup. And so I'd moved away from tea bags, and it really amazes me because, you know, some of the high-end restaurants will serve your individual tea in one of those lovely silk pouches, one of those fancy tea bags, and that's nylon. It's like tea bag in a pair of pantyhose. And I fell for it for a while. I fell for the whole image of silk and elegance and smoothness. But it's just plastic, folks. And I would prefer to avoid it. And if you really want to go all the way, if you're served a tea bag in one of these pouches, you could ultimately open it up, free the tea leaves, and brew your tea without them. I think it's a better way to go. Now, at home, I love our tea. I have an entire tea drawer of flavors. We drink a lot of teas, and they're organic, they're loose leaf, they're fair trade. No tea bags. And some people may think this is extravagant, but I really believe I'm actually saving money on the amount of tea that I drink. Instead of buying in bags, I'm buying a high quality tea in bulk. And it really is very cost effective. And it gives me enormous joy. Enormous joy to wake up in the morning and know I'm going to have a delicious brew of some lovely, fragrant flavor, toasty. It could be rich, it can be light. There's so many different options, so many different, a whole wide range of flavors. I really go nutty over my tea. Now, I mentioned before when I first tried white tea, I didn't like it. And that's because it was some crummy low-quality white tea in a tea bag. So I got that extra plastic flavoring along with the white tea. And not too long ago, a friend of mine gave me a gift of a variety of green and white bulk teas, and I went nuts over some of these white teas. And it was a self-discovery, and when I went through what I went through, I learned that it wasn't unusual what I was doing. So I would prepare these teas, and you may know that it's recommended to brew black teas with boiling water, and then green and white teas are brewed with a slightly lower temperature. Typically, you boil the water and just wait a minute or two for the temperature to go down, and then you can brew your green and white teas. It brings out the best and leaves out the worst when you brew them at the recommended temperatures. So I began experimenting with a number of different white teas. I would brew them at the required temperature. I took out a thermometer and made sure they were the right temperature. It was kind of fun for a while. And yes, there are appliances that make this very easy for you, where you can set the temperature you want the water to be at before you brew your tea. And although it's tempting, I have not gone for one of these things. I've given up the thermometer now, and I just play it by ear. But the white teas were so amazing. I would start by taking in a great big whiff of the tea leaves before I brewed them. It's always good to breathe, number one, and really be aware of breathing and discover all the good smells, or not so good smells, in that breath. I find it very, very exciting and invigorating. And when I breathe in these white tea leaves, it's a lovely, fresh, grassy smell, but it gets better. So I brew my tea, and then I can breathe the wet tea leaves after I've had my tea, and I feel sometimes that I can visualize an entire field of wildflowers and native grasses so fresh in morning air. It really brings me somewhere, and why not? It's fabulous. So I love my tea. That's my white tea story, and now I pretty much stick to Bai Mudan, which is a white tea. I also like jasmine green and a variety of different green teas. I haven't gone to the really high-end varieties just because I can't afford it, but I do like the ones that I allow myself to get and can afford. But tea can be like a fine wine. You know, there are so many different expensive bottles of wine out there, and there are low-end and high-end, and you can really enjoy them all. I've had some really inexpensive bottles of wine that are lovely, but the more expensive they are, or the more time that's been taken to produce them, there's usually more layers of flavor, more things to discover. So much for tea. So I recommend getting organic fair trade loose leaf tea, and I don't get any reimbursement for plugging anybody, but I purchase most of my tea from Arbor Teas. I like them a lot. One more thing about tea before I move on. When we got here to Montesereno in this lovely little pool house that we're staying in, our host made sure there was a tea kettle for us to boil water for our tea because she knew we loved tea. But we didn't have a teapot. Now, I had packed with me a little tea egg to put our loose leaf tea, and I brought a number of different packages of loose leaf tea, English breakfast, and kukicha. I love kukicha. Kukicha is called twig tea. It looks like little pieces of twigs because it is made from trees. And there are different kinds. I prefer the browner variety, more like black tea. There are also greener varieties of kukicha. I find it's very sweet and nutty. It's just a lovely, complex flavor. And less caffeine. There's some caffeine in it, but less than black tea. It's lovely. And I brought some peppermint tea and some tea chino because we like to have tea at night that has no caffeine in it. Okay, we thought we needed a teapot, so we went out and we thought we'd buy a teapot and leave it here as a gift in the pool house. Well, there were no teapots to be found. We went into all the finest houseware stores here, Sur la Table, Williams-Sonoma, some other smaller brand but lovely housewares places. Nobody had a teapot. We finally had to get in the car and go to, I think we got it at Target of all places. But it was really a statement to me that people are definitely choose convenience. And convenience means making tea with a tea bag or making tea or coffee with a Keurig rather than taking the time to scoop out the coffee or the tea and pour the hot water over and brew it. And that gave me pause for a moment. But we did find a lovely teapot and Karen was happy. Very happy indeed. We went to a lot of restaurants this month and I don't enjoy eating in restaurants very often. I like it as a treat because it's lovely to sit and relax and be served and not have to do the dishes and have a wide variety of choices. I think it's a lovely concept. I don't like to do it every day because, number one, I love to prepare my food, but I also believe that my food is better. Not just the way we prepare it, but it's simple. I don't have to worry about sugar, soil, and all. Sugar. Did I say soil? I don't have to worry about sugar, salt, oil, mysterious ingredients that I don't know what they are. When I make my food at home, for the most part, I know what's in it. I like to say that when we eat food, it's really a leap of faith unless we've grown it ourselves. We don't know where the food's been, who's touched it, what soil it's grown in, what water has been used, what's been in the soil, in the water, how it's been packaged, what temperature it's been at along the way, how long it's been stored, what happened to it when it was in the store, etc., etc. You know, we really don't know. So I like to really keep that story to the minimum by buying produce with the few number of middlemen in between from me and the farmer. And then preparing it myself. And I feel better that way. Very often when I eat in a restaurant, I'm overloaded with salt, no matter how careful I am. And I don't feel good. But we did pretty well this month. And I want to talk about some of the places that we did visit, that we did enjoy, and some of the choices we made. So one of the great discoveries was a restaurant called Andalay in Los Gatos, and they have a few restaurants. We went to their patio, and that was especially nice because I said I love eating, just living outdoors, and it's so lovely eating outdoors, and they have a nice back patio. They have a tofu taco, And you can get it in a number of ways, and every way is absolutely fabulous. So they make these French fry-looking strips of tofu, and you can have them sautéed, and that comes with a kind of a Mexican tomato sauce served on a soft tortilla with guacamole and some other vegetables. Really, I can't believe how fabulous it is. Or you can get it fajita-style, where these strips are lightly fried on the outside, and then you don't get the tomato sauce on your soft tortilla, corn tortilla, or you can have your corn tortilla fried crispy so it's hard. All three ways, all good, and they were just so delicious, and I don't know how clean this place is, but they do have a card on their table, and I appreciate it because it makes me feel like they know what the issues are and they're thinking about them. So they advertise that the meat that they use is grass-fed, that the produce that they use, for the most part, is sourced from California, locally sourced food. They make a lot of the sauces they use in-house, and you can tell the difference. So we took five different little cups of different sauces. They had like a creamy peanut sauce, and a salsa, and then a green tomatillo kind of sauce, and a hot sauce. I forget what the other. Oh no, and then some kind of pickled jalapenos. All of them were amazing, and it was tough because the dishes were already perfectly seasoned, but I wanted to try all these different sauces. It was really a lot of fun. We went there a few times, and there's this lovely Los Gatos Creek trail here, and I would invite friends that I hadn't seen for a while to walk the trail with me, or I would walk with my partner Gary, or sometimes we would run, which was extra challenging because one particular trail goes up some nice hills and it's hot, and you get really, really hot. But it's nice afterwards to come down the hill from your run, you've had a nice workout, and then get a lovely meal at Andale. That was really fun. On the other side, we were invited a number of times to a restaurant called Aldo's. And Aldo's is a nice Italian restaurant. Everybody's talking Italian inside. There are real Italians working in this place. And we went there for a number of celebrations. Gary's birthday was we celebrated early in the month, and his dad's 90th birthday we celebrated towards the end of the month. And I don't eat a lot of pasta or a lot of noodles. I really try and avoid refined flour. I do have pasta occasionally. I enjoy it. But it's one of these foods that's so convenient that for a long time I was eating a lot of pasta. A lot of people were eating a lot of pasta. And then, you know, we thought it was a healthy food. And now I'm discovering that refined flours really aren't nutritious, and I try and stick with whole, minimally processed grains, and I'm happy with that. In fact, I like the chew and the fuller flavor in the whole grains. The pasta just doesn't have enough flavor for me anymore. Okay, enough raging on pasta, but when you're in an Italian restaurant like this particular one, there aren't many vegetarian options unless you get a pasta. And so I ordered a wonderful salad, a radicchio arugula salad with a light basil vinaigrette. It was lovely, fresh tasting. I really enjoyed it, and I thought afterwards I should have ordered three or four of these and made that my meal. But there was a vegetarian pasta on the menu. It was a wide rigatoni noodle served with eggplant, peas, and mushrooms in a light tomato sauce. I thought, maybe I can just get the vegetables without the pasta in tomato sauce, and I explained that to the waiter, and mentioned he could throw in some other vegetables as well. And when it came, I was kind of kicking myself because I thought, Karen, you should know better. But the problem is I've been spoiled. I've been spoiled in so many restaurants that are out there today that are so vegan friendly and accommodate those of us who just want to eat plants and minimally processed plants. And what happened was I got this big bowl that normally serves the pasta dish, and I got the vegetables without the pasta. But that meant there weren't any vegetables. And so I enjoyed my small little bowl of vegetables. And it wasn't even the vegetables that I had asked for. It was broccoli and carrots in a tomato sauce, which was nice, just not a lot. But I didn't want to make a fuss about it. I had already had a nice salad. It was fine. It was a light meal. And I was happy to be with the family with this big celebration and just made a mental note to talk about quantity the next time I have the privilege to be eating in a restaurant, because it is a privilege, and it is such a good thing to have the opportunity to talk about food and to eat wonderful food. And I just like to express my gratitude all the time about it, because I know that there are people out there that are struggling and can't afford food, can't afford good food, or don't know how to prepare healthy food to make it good. A moment of gratitude. Some of the other restaurants I wanted to highlight. I've talked about Vegetarian House before. We really love them. They catered our Happy Birthday review back in 2013 when we did it here in San Jose for Responsible Eating and Living. We've been there a number of times during this trip. We decided to host a party of friends who wanted to see us that we hadn't seen in a while. And there were about 25 of us, and we were at the Vegetarian House. It was really great. What I loved about it was most of the people there weren't vegetarian. It was a new experience for them to try this kind of food, and everybody had a great time, and everybody loved it. And I hope that they go back and try this food again and discover that they don't need to have meat and dairy at every meal, let alone any meal. But here's the thing that really tickled me this time. When we go to the Vegetarian House, we typically order a big bowl of soup, one of these Vietnamese-style big bowls of soup. I like what's called the Flying Buddha. It doesn't have noodles in it. They do have big bowl noodle soups, but this has more interesting little chewy nuggets of different things. I'm trying to think of what they are. Different roots, like taro and sweet potato, yam, but they do different things to them so that you don't even know what you're eating. They're just tasty, chewy little pieces of things in this big, lovely bowl of brothy soup. I love it. If you're ever in San Jose, go to the Vegetarian House, get the Flying Buddha, tell them I sent you. But what people were doing was, I never noticed this before, there were non-alcoholic beverages on the menu. I don't think they have a liquor license. I don't think they even want to serve alcohol. The people behind this restaurant have a somewhat spiritual bent to them. And they have non-alcoholic beers and wines. I never noticed them before. And my friends in the party were ordering them. It was really fun to see the server come with a tray filled with those tall beer glasses and bottles of non-alcoholic champagne and wine. And everybody was just enjoying the festivity. And it made me think a minute about drinking alcohol. Now, I love beer and wine, but I don't love what it does afterwards. A lot of times, drinking alcoholic beverages doesn't make me feel my best. And I love the idea of enjoying the idea of it, having a drink, toasting, but not experiencing the after effect. Okay, maybe these non-alcoholic beverages don't have the complexity and full-bodied taste of regular beer and wine, but I thought it was really fun that people were going for it and having the full dining experience in this place. It was really, really fun. One last thing. As I mentioned, we celebrated Gary's birthday early in the month and his dad's 90th birthday just a few days ago, and we were able to get a vegan gluten-free cake at a local bakery in Los Gatos called Icing on the Cake. It's something you need to custom order, but it is available. When we got it the first time for Gary, it was a delightful surprise because it was really, really delicious. We got the carrot cake. We got the same cake, only larger this time for his dad, and it still tasted great, but it was really crumbly. It was very hard to cut. It didn't seem to matter to people. Everybody was happy to have cake, and they just ate it all up. There really wasn't anything left over. But I like cakes to be beautiful, and I was trying to... I wanted everything that was vegan to be the best it possibly could be for everyone that was there who knew nothing about this type of eating. And so I was a little disappointed that the cake was crummy, but it was delicious. Some things to think about when you're in a restaurant. And it can be really frustrating. And you have to decide, is it important or is it not? But I think it's important to know what you can get. Now, I try and avoid genetically modified food, but I know I've got some in my body. I've allowed some of it, knowingly or unknowingly, to enter. The real hard part is in restaurants. Unless restaurants say that they don't use genetically modified ingredients, you're probably getting them. And where are you getting them? In places you least expect. I like to order a salad because I can see everything that's there. I can see the ingredients. I can't see the ingredients in the salad dressing. So in really questionable restaurants, I will not get a dressing. I will just get a lemon wedge or a lime wedge and squeeze it, or ask if they have vinegar and olive oil. But olive oil, you may have heard this, sometimes is thinned with other oils, and salad dressing is made very frequently with soybean oil, or could be corn oil, and both of those are very often genetically modified. If they're not organic, they're very likely genetically modified. So if you're eating clean and you're getting a light little salad dressing on your lovely salad, you're likely getting some soybean oil that's GMO. Ouch. And the same is true with a sauté of vegetables. You don't know what oil they're using in the back. Very often they say they're sautéing in olive oil. Again, I don't know if it's pure olive oil or a thinned olive oil or not, or just a vegetable oil. But it may be genetically modified soy or corn oil. So just something to keep in mind. The same is true when ordering any soy product, edamame, tofu. It may be genetically modified. You may ask, and I encourage asking. Asking in a loving, non-judgmental, polite, fun way, if you can, to the server. They're most likely not going to know, but the more of us who ask, bring the importance of it to the front. It's taken decades to get where we are with vegan-friendly food in restaurants, and it's because of those of us who have been nagging relentlessly about it. Unfortunately, because of all the food allergies that exist today, especially with children, the good part that's come out of that is restaurants are far more aware of the ingredients that they're putting in their foods, because they don't want people going into shock or dropping dead in their restaurants. It would not look very good. Now, I have had the opportunity to prepare food while living here. We have a simple little efficiency kitchen, which means we have a tiny little refrigerator. It's actually a wine refrigerator, so there's a very little space that's actually really cool to keep certain foods cool. So basically what we've been doing is having rolled oats in the morning with some soy milk and a variety of different fruits or nuts, and I love it. And every day it's a little different because I get a little different fruit in it, or dried fruit, or different raw nuts and seeds. One day it could be strawberries, another day it could be mangoes, Another day I can add dates. One day I can add peanuts or cashews or walnuts and just mix up the ingredients a little bit. Theme and variation, it makes every morning a delight, and I really look forward to it. Some of the other things, we've prepared simple things. We've purchased some corn tortillas, avocados, fresh tomatoes. I like to make a simple little, almost like a sandwich, just with a corn tortilla. I don't even cook it. And spread some mashed avocado on it and some fresh tomatoes, and it's great. But can we take a little break right now where I rage on corn tortillas? The first thing is, I don't want to buy corn tortillas with genetically modified corn. So, if it doesn't say it's organic, it may be genetically modified corn. And then the other thing, have you read the ingredients on so many corn tortillas out there? Why do we need to add cellulose gum and a variety of other gums and all kinds of other things? My corn tortillas are organic corn, water, and a trace of lime. That's it. Done. And they're fabulous. So we use those simple corn tortillas and just put a few things on them. That's been a nice little meal or snack. One day I had the most satisfying meal, and it was really nothing to it. So we have a jar of tahini because we like to make tahini dressing. Have you made tahini dressing yet? I highly recommend it. You can go to Responsibility and Living and Google, put in the search bar tahini, or simple tahini dressing will come up. It's just beating water into the sesame butter, which is tahini, and beating it until it's nice and white and creamy, adding enough little water so that it's still thick but comes nice and creamy. And then you can squeeze in a little lemon juice or vinegar to taste, and it's the best dressing you possibly can have, and so simple. So we have this tahini dressing. I just had some celery stalks, some chickpeas from a soft container of chickpeas, not from a can. There are these bricks now that you can get in Whole Foods and other stores that contain chickpeas, and when I can't soak them and cook them at home, this is the best bet. So I just had a plate of chickpeas, celery, and tahini, and I was so satisfied. It was the simplest dinner and really great. We've been making a lot of kale salads. One day I came up with a really great little late night dinner treat, which was sliced bananas and then some sesame butter dotted with some lovely dates. It's a little banana tahini date sandwich. Fabulous. Then we did go to Carmel, which is over the Santa Cruz Mountains down towards Monterey. It's a lovely, lovely little stunning town, lots of tourists. And we ate in a restaurant called Basil. And what's wonderful about Basil is they locally source their produce, and they really know how to prepare vegetables. It's not a vegetarian restaurant, but they are very vegan friendly. We ordered a number of sides, and one of the things we ordered was cauliflower, and I could see one of the bus people walking into the kitchen with these beautiful heads of yellow and purple heirloom cauliflower. It was phenomenal. And then later on, when we were in Whole Foods, a day or two later, we saw these same yellow and purple cauliflower available, organic, heirloom, and extremely inexpensive. I bought one of these large yellow heads of cauliflower. It was $2.50, and I can never find a regular white organic head of cauliflower for less than $5, really. But here we were buying food that's locally grown, in season, and just spectacular. At the restaurant, they prepared the cauliflower with some with pine nuts and yellow raisins. It was really great. Last night, we roasted that cauliflower, just cutting it up, just lightly oiling a baking pan, putting the pieces of cauliflower with some bell peppers, yellow and red, and some bits of garlic cloves and some tomatoes, and roasted them up, and it was spectacular. I made a side of pisto, and pisto should not be confused with pesto. We do have recipe for pisto at responsibleeatingandliving.com, P-I-S-T-O. I think pisto was created before pesto came along, but pisto is just basil, garlic, and olive oil. And it's a really lovely garnish. You can add a very little bit amount, little bit of it in soups or on vegetables, and it bursts with flavor, and it smells up the whole room with this phenomenal deliciousness. So good. Okay, I think the last thing I want to touch on is a report that recently came out. Maybe you're familiar with Michelle Simon. She has a website, eatdrinkpolitics.com, and she does phenomenal work. She's a lawyer, and she digs deep. And a lot of people have been talking about the fact that, can we trust our scientists today? Can we trust the journals that publish the reports that we're seeing? You know, there used to be a time where we thought these scientific journals were the place where we could find trustworthy, peer-reviewed information on the latest scientific research. And now people are becoming suspect because there's so much money out there, pharmaceutical industries, the big ag, meat and dairy industries, and they want to show that their products are healthful. And the question is, are they buying up scientists and scientific journals to make their products look good? And if you read this report by Michelle Simon, you're really going to think that, yes, they do buy these journals up. She has a new report called, Has the American Society for Nutrition Lost All Credibility? The American Society for Nutrition is the nation's leading authority of nutrition scientists and researchers. And she's discovered that they have some cozy relationships with PepsiCo, Coca-Cola, Nestle, McDonald's, Monsanto, Mars, the Sugar Association. And in her report, she's dug up lots of interesting information where these different companies donate to advertise in the journal. They donate at their conferences. And the result is not very good, as you can see in her report. I recommend reading it. Some of the conclusions made really floored me. One of them, I'm looking for it. Well, you may just have to read it to find out. but really spectacular report. So that's eatdrinkpolitics.com. It's her June 14th article, Has the American Society for Nutrition Lost All Credibility? Sad news. I don't want to end on sad news because it's now time to end the program, so I just want you to join me for a moment. Just close your eyes and imagine you're in this really peaceful, beautiful surroundings. Can you hear the crows cawing and the water flowing? It's really lovely. The air is warm. The sun is shining. The sky is blue. It's really such a peaceful place. If you close your eyes, you can join me here for a moment. Take in a breath. The air is delicious. Let it go. Take it in again. Let it go. I'm Karen Hartglass. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food. Have a really delicious week. See you next week in New York.